Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio Scan Show number 2386. NASCA has a single purpose, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect, and we do so with only two goals. The first one is educating the public, especially related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts, and showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. The second is offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. I am Linda Vitti from New Jersey, an advocate, counselor, and life coach, and I will be your host for this evening. So welcome. We encourage you to call in and be part of our panel. The number is 646-595-2118. Again, that's 646-595-2118. Tonight's special guest is Angela Hyman from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Angela is joining us for the first time as a survivor of childhood incest. Instead of reading her whole biography, you can see that on the screen on our website, but I'm just going to introduce her and let her get right into her story. So we're going to welcome Angela. Hi, Angela.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Linda. How are you?
Good. How are you feeling?
I'm doing okay, I guess. I'm a little nervous, of course, like I was saying earlier when we chatted. And so, of course, I'm here. That's a big thing.
Okay. So here's how we're going to do it. We have a large panel, which is wonderful. So a lot of people want to hear your story, which is why I didn't go through the biography. I'm going to let you just tell it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to let you start about 10 minutes of your story, and then I'm going to stop you, and we're going to go to the panel, and they'll ask questions or, you know, comment, and then we'll go back to your story, and that's how we'll do it for the hour and a half. Okay?
Okay.
All right.
I guess we'll start with
the
beginning. All righty. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, again, everyone, I'm Angela, and I am from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. I was born in South Carolina, and my paternal grandparents adopted me. My mother was Native American Indian, which at that time in the 60s was quite a controversy because they were considered people of color. And so I came about in a tribulous time, though my grandparents absolutely loved me. So as I tell my story and speak of my grandparents, they were my parents. They legally adopted me, and I never remember living with anyone else other than them. Very idyllic childhood, very loved, very protected. I grew up on a working farm, and everything was really so innocent in my world. I never realized that until many years later. Very small community, a lot of family there, and like I said, I had an older sister who was like 15 years older than me. She went to nursing school the year that I started first grade, and she was my idol. I mean, I just totally, I wanted the moon rose and set on her. And so I was a little devastated whenever she left home, and she met a guy in the Air Force base that was near the nursing school that she was at. He was from New Jersey. And it was a big deal whenever she got married. She eloped because my grandfather didn't approve of him. He kind of, I don't know, it's kind of weird now that I look back. I guess he must have had a premonition maybe. But anyhow, when I was 11 years old, my grandmother became ill. I didn't know that at the time. They kept everything covered. And Peggy had graduated nursing school, and they had moved back to his hometown in New Jersey. She was working in a hospital in Ramsey, and he had gotten laid off. He had had a baby, and I was told that I was just going to go for a few weeks to help them take care of the baby and babysit a little bit. You know, and I'm 11. I'm like, great. I'm going to New Jersey. I'm going to have something to write about when I go back to school this year. You know, they ask, what did you do in the summer vacation, right?
Right.
And I didn't, little did I know at that time, of course, after having read and done a lot of research and read everything that I could get my hands on, I know that he immediately started grooming me. And my childhood, like I said, was very protected. I mean, if there was any violence on TV, my grandmother would, we would go into another room and do something different. I mean, I just never was exposed to any violence in any way. And so while she was working, and she would leave very early in the mornings to start her nursing shift, and it would be dark, and it would just be me, him, and the baby. And then we started going to the movies sometime in the afternoons, and his mother would babysit for them while we would go out, because that was a thing. He wanted to get me out for a while. And after one pretty horrifying, terrifying movie. The next morning, whenever Peggy left for work, he went into the bedroom where I was at and told me that he knew that I was scared and I could just come and lay in the bed with him. And then everything started happening from there, and it continued for about 4 years, and we were only there actually for a portion of the summer. And I can remember whenever we were driving back to South Carolina, all I could think was, oh my God, they're going to know. As soon as they see me, they're going to know. And of course, he had convinced me that somehow I had provoked all this, and all the typical things, you know. I mean, he really knew exactly what he was doing. There's no doubt in my mind about that. And so we made that long drive from New Jersey to South Carolina. And many times after I got back, my grandfather always said that I was never the same. And of course, she was gravely ill. She was very ill. And they ended up going back to New Jersey, and I thought it was over. And then they moved back to South Carolina so that she could help with my grandmother and her mother, my mother. And she went to work at the local hospital there, and he managed to get a job as a police officer in the local city, same city that she was working in. And of course, they worked opposite shifts, and it was very convenient for me to be a babysitter and very convenient for me to be there when she wasn't there so he could sleep to take care of the baby, but that's not how that went down. There was a point.
Why don't we stop there?
Okay.
Why don't we stop there, and we'll go to the panel. I can't imagine going from a safe, loving, nurturing environment to where you have to
hide and keep secrets and feel unsafe in that way. I mean, that's horrifying. So let me just go right to the panel. I'm going to first go to my wonderful trailer and co-host, Joe, in Oregon. Hi, Joe.
Hey, thank you. Angela, wow, what a difference, huh? And I was wondering, knowing that you're can look back on it and see how the grooming process was, but you didn't know it at the time. And so it's awful how the perpetrator can turn it around, making it sound like you're the one who is instigating it. And especially for someone who has been raised in such a protected environment, that was hard.
I never spoke about it ever. I never told anyone, not even my best friend, ever.
Wow.
I never did.
Wow.
But yeah, you know, hindsight now, you know, after you learn, and it was just so classic. And that really made me angry after I learned that.
Yeah. But, well, I'm interested in hearing more of your story. So thank you so much for sharing tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. Okay, we're going to go to Val in New Jersey. Hi, Val.
Hi.
Hi,
Angela.
Val. Yes,
I just want to tell you that I'm just so sorry that happened to you, and I just really care. And I'm looking forward to hearing more of your story, and I'm also wondering, the first thing I thought of was I was wondering how it started to affect you physically. Like, I'm wondering, keeping this painful secret and trauma inside, how it started affecting you. So I'll be wanting to hear the rest of your story.
Okay. That did, of course, it started affecting me in all different kinds of ways, physically, of course. Goes along with it, right?
I imagine.
So, you know, when everything started happening, I hadn't really even started showing any signs of puberty yet, you know. My menstrual was very delayed. I was very late, and I always thought something was wrong there. And, of course, later on in my adult life, I've had multiple surgeries and different illnesses, and, you know, that's after learning more and reading the things about the long-lasting effects and how it does kind of all contribute back and tie to a lot of things when you've been traumatized and violated and your body reacts, you know?
Absolutely.
I'm so sorry.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Val. And we're going to come back
thank
to you.
You.
Thank okay, you. Okay, we're going to go to Carol in New Jersey. Hi, Carol.
Hey. Hi, Angela. How you doing?
Hi, Carol. I'm here. Thank you so much for asking, and thank you guys for being here. And one of the biggest things, I just would like to say this before, if I can, I appreciate everyone's sympathy, and that's always been a big thing for me because I've never been I don't want anyone to feel sorry for me. I don't know why I needed to say that, but I'm sure you can all empathize with me because you can't be here, but it is what it is now, and I just have to learn how to deal with it and not feel sorry for myself is the biggest thing. But thank you all.
Well, I just want to tell you, you're doing a fine job. And I told you were going to be in good hands, okay? And we all understand, you know, what it's like to be, you know, physically, mentally, emotionally, sexually abused and neglected too. And so you are in very good hands tonight. And we are here to support you. And by the time you get off the phone, like I said, you're not going to be nervous anymore, okay? You're a part of the NASCA family, okay? You have a family right here.
Thank you, Amen. Carol. Thank you.
You're welcome,
That's
honey.
True.
You go right ahead.
Thanks, Carol.
You're welcome. Mm-hmm.
And I just want to say to you, Angela, that sometimes when people at NASCA say, I'm sorry you went through that, they're empathizing with you, especially newer people. That's because we've all, anybody on the panel has been through something.
Right, and I get that, I do, but you know, it was a big thing for
I know.
Me, but thank you.
I get that. Okay, we're going to go to the 587 number, and we don't know your name. Hello? Who is this? Hello? 587-600-1573, are you there?
Okay. They're not there. Okay. I just made a boo-boo, but I'm putting them on silent.
And Darlene in Tennessee. Darlene.
Hi there. I know that you don't want sympathy and or anything like that, and I used to want sympathy, but now I ask for empathy just so that other people can try to help others, you know? And I'm sorry
Thank
you've been through
you.
What you've been through as well. So that's why we say empathy as well, because, you know, we're empathetic, be able to understand what you're going through. And we're not here to judge you or anything. We're here for you.
Thank you, Darlene.
You're quite
That really means a lot.
Thanks, Darlene.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to go to Bobby in Florida. Hi, Bobby.
Hello.
Bobby, you there?
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah. Who is the moderator tonight, the host? What's
I'm
your
Linda.
Name?
Linda.
Linda. Linda. Linda, and Angela. Hello, Angela.
Hi, how are you?
I'm in Miami, Florida, darling, and the weather is just stupendous.
I'm
Stupendously
sure.
Stupendously lovely. Yeah, it really is. It's strange that we have such lovely weather, you know, but we're early springtime, middle springtime, and it's just lovely in Miami. You're invited. It's a nice vacation spot.
You have any questions for Angela, Bobby?
I'm thinking, Linda, of what I'm going to ask her. But no,
Angela.
Right,
you want
Angela.
To come back to you?
Yeah. No. No. Angela.
Yes.
Hello, Angela.
Yes.
I'm listening to you, really, with two ears. So it's somebody that you're telling your story, and I'm listening with my story, and I'm glad you could pick up and speak. Beautiful you. Thank you.
I'm glad you're here as well.
Thanks, Bobby. Okay, we're going to go to, I believe it's Katarina in Canada. Katarina, is that you?
Yes. Hi. Can you hear me?
Katarina, I need to apologize to you. We didn't know who it was, and I said your number by accident, and I so apologize for that.
No, don't even worry about it. Can you hear me, though, now?
Yes. Yes, you're fine now.
Great. Well, what a story. It's funny how so many victims, they are shamed, they're gaslit, and the innocence, it's stripped away to an extent, but it's never truly gone, like from the actual soul of the person. We are still who we are, but we are slightly tainted, you know, like our smile goes away, we fall into a depression, and all those things that are natural from experiencing a trauma. I'm really sorry that you had to go through what you had to go through. I definitely want to hear more of the story. And I'm glad that you called in, because every time I hear something like this, it's shocking, and it's sad, and it's heartbreaking. So, you know, I'm really sorry you had to go through that.
Thank you, Katarina. I'm here. Gotta keep Katarina. I'm so sorry. You know, I just gotta keep fighting. I will not let him win.
Exactly. You keep at it. And your voice is very strong. You know, you can move mountains with your story. So just keep doing what you're doing and don't be scared. I'm glad you're on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Now I'm going to let you, I just want to say, you know, what I'm thinking of is the secrecy in all this, that you kept it so secretive and he groomed you to keep it secretive, and it kept going on because of that. And that's just something that we try and ask it, at, like, get people to use their voice and speak out, because the secretiveness is what killed us. So I'm going to let you pick up where we left off. I'm sorry.
Let's see if I can even remember where we left off. I think I had a little.
They had moved to South Carolina, and you're right.
Right, and he was working, and she was working in the emergency room at the time. And like I said, I was there often, and whenever. I guess I didn't realize that at this time either, that at that time that he also, I guess I had grown out of the age group that he was attracted to, and he brought in another police officer. So that made it added another whole angle to it, because you are always taught to, a police officer was supposed to be a good person, you know, someone who would help you.
Hmm.
And
right.
So it continued on for a total of 4 to 5 years. And then things were falling apart in their marriage. And the last time I saw him or ever heard his voice ever again, he came to our house in the country, in a very rural area, along with the same police officer, very late at night. And my grandfather, they were in our living room, and I couldn't really hear what was being said. But the last thing that I did hear being said was from my grandfather, who was telling them that they needed to leave his property and to never come back there again, or he would kill them. And that was one of the reasons for my secret, because he had convinced me that my grandfather would kill me. And I don't even know how he managed to do that, because he had never laid a hand on me, you know, in any way. But I knew that, somebody was going to die, and I wasn't so sure it was going to be the bad guy. It was going to be him. And so, like I said, I never told anyone, not even my very best friend, who may even be here listening to light tonight. We've been friends all these years. And so going on past that, I never saw him again. He never came back to our property again. We went through a very ugly divorce. And he lived in New Jersey. So when he was supposed to have the baby, who at that time was a toddler, 4 or 5 years old, and during one of his visitations for the summer, he kept her. He didn't bring her back. And the laws were very different at that time, you know, because we're into the 70s now, 70s. My grandfather, they hired a private detective, and I always thought, as I started addressing my things, and one of the, I always thought, you know, why couldn't I have told them, you know, and maybe it would have protected the daughter. And I still couldn't talk. I couldn't find my voice, and I was still deathly afraid of what would happen to my grandfather, and I really thought that, you know, one of them would die, you know, and so he hired a private detective, and they flew to New Jersey, and they were going to snatch her from school, and it didn't work. He did somehow. She wasn't at school that day, so I know my grandfather spent a lot of money trying to get her back. And I never, even with all of that going on, I couldn't tell. I still didn't have the courage to tell what could have helped, possibly, because I feel like the classic pedophile that he was, I was not his only victim, and we all know how that works too, you know. You've done any of your own.
Right.
And, you know, it doesn't stop with me. Not one. I'm not the first one, and I probably won't be the last one. So it put a big strain on my family, and it changed every relationship that I had. And I started, of course, doing the teenage thing at that time. I ran away from home and drinking and drugging, and just wouldn't follow my grandfather's rules. And the only thing he had ever done was try to protect me. And by my senior year of high school, I was not living at home. I was then living with my future husband. And we were married for 12 years. And I never told him. He never knew. No one ever knew. And things were not working between he and I either. And I was drinking. I started drinking heavily. Not one day of my life went by that something didn't trigger a memory, a smell, or a sound, or someone's voice. You know, it was just really crazy. And we ended up in a divorce, a very ugly, nasty divorce. I started really binge drinking at that point because my whole world was falling apart. And as a result, he did end up with custody of my two children just for a couple of years. Just so happened the very next day after our divorce, I got a job offer in South Florida, and I moved to South Florida. I started going to AA. I went once, and it didn't work. I had to go back out and try it again. And then the second time that I went back, I was so desperate. You know, how they always ask, what do you want? I couldn't even talk. I couldn't even say my name. All I knew was I just needed some type of peace of mind, and I didn't know if that was ever going to happen. Suicide, of course, had been in my mind. And, I mean, I was very concerned because I wasn't thinking of anything very typical. I was thinking of ways to make it look like an accident because, again, I didn't want to hurt my grandfather and my grandmother in any way, and that was just totally devastated them. I'd already hurt them enough and had reestablished a relationship with them that was just wonderful, even though they never knew. And so at that point, of course, I started working very closely with a sponsor. They told me that's what I needed to do. And while I was working the steps, she was the very first person that I ever told my story to.
And, wow.
We burned a bunch of papers in a grill, you know, because she told me that was behind me. And it was really, she was a wonderful person. She was exactly the person that I needed at that time, I guess. And so when I moved to South Florida, I, of course, started doing AA, and I met some really wonderful people, and I was still very, very hurt, still hurt. I don't think it ever goes away. It changes. And I met a person. He was not a sponsor, but at some time, we had talked about a little of my story, very little. And they encouraged me to seek counseling, and I was desperate to get my children back and to get my life back if I was going to have any kind of life.
Mm.
And so I started going to counselors, and of course I would go, and I just couldn't. I couldn't do it. And they told me to just keep going, you know, until you'll walk in and you'll know that it'll be okay. That'll be the one. So after several visits to multiple therapists, I went to this lady on Harrison Street in Hollywood, Florida. And one of the very first things that she told me was that if I had ever thought about killing myself, it would be okay to tell her.
Yeah.
Because she wouldn't have me committed. Because it was a very normal thought process, something to run through my mind.
Right.
You know, and just because I had a thought didn't, I had to act out on it. So that was the thing that made me continue to go back to her.
That's wonderful. And let me, I'm going to stop you there because we're about 10 minutes in and we're going to go back to the panel. But a lot of us, you're going to find in NASCA, have gone to drugs or alcohol. Kind of to shut the voices off and shove all the feelings down and all that kind of stuff. So it's very common here. But we're going to go to Joe in Oregon, my wonderful co-host. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Thank you. Angela, I was so glad that you found someone and you really trusted that person because you were able to talk with her. And that is so great. That was sort of a turning point, I would think, right? And wow, what a difference. Mm. Wow. I've done that kind of thing too about writing things down, really, you know, just getting it out there and then either burning it or tearing it up or whatever, you know, gets it out. But that was really good that you found her, and it sounded like it was a good move there. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
Okay, Val in New Jersey. Hi, Val.
Hi, Angela. I just really appreciate you telling your story, and I'm a little triggered right now, but I am the daughter of childhood sexual abuse survivor, and I am a trauma survivor, and I'm just so grateful that you found help. And I mean, I'm so grateful that you did. I know it doesn't erase, but it's hope for healing. And my mother never found that. And just hearing your story, I'm just wondering about my mom and how it went for her because she never spoke of it. She never found her voice. And I just want to tell you I appreciate so much for you that you found your voice and you found help. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Val.
Thanks, Val. Okay, Carol in New Jersey.
Yeah, Andrea. You know, I'm so happy, too. I mean, we're all saying the same thing here. There are times that people do go, you know, to their grave that just simply don't tell, whether it be male or female, you know. And they go through life with this dirty secret that we say on NASCA. And it just eats away, you know, at you physically, mentally, emotionally, and stuff. So I'm so thankful that you found someone you could speak to. And it's not uncommon to hold that secret in for many, many years before you actually do start to tell someone. But what a relief comes, you know, after you start telling your story time after time after time. And it actually takes away. You can't take away the pain. You can't take away, what happened to you. But you become stronger. And so that's one thing that we do here in NASCA. We've told our stories, most of us, many times. And then, of course, we're able to help people. So thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. And I think you're going to consider it to be a good experience. I'm quite sure of it. Okay. So go on and tell us some more of your story. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Carol. Okay, we're going to go to Darlene in Tennessee. Hi, Darlene.
Hello, you are very brave in telling your story. It is so hard for us survivors, or well, some of them don't like to be called survivors anymore, thrivers. But I still call it survivors because we didn't survive past the ordeal. And it's like, hey, you didn't think we would live. You didn't think we did would live, so we're still alive. So
we're still alive.
Huh? Do what? Hello?
She didn't say anything, darling.
Yeah, I'm not sure who she was talking to.
She was talking to you.
I'm talking
to right?
Saying that, you know, how we are called, some people say that they'd rather be called thrivers instead of survivors. And
right.
My thing is, the reason why I say survivor is because they did not expect me to live, and I'm living. Hey, you know, I'm alive. I went past what you wanted to happen to me. So I survived it. So I'd proudly say survivor, you know?
I'm glad you're here.
Thank you.
Thanks, Darlene. Okay, Bobby in Florida.
Oh, here I am. Here I am. I'm back. Here I am. I'm back. You can hear me, Linda?
Yep. We can hear you.
Oh, wonderful. Angela, I saw on your how you happened to be in Miami working at that parts department place. How did you happen to find this therapy in Hollywood? What was the impetus there, or the catalyst?
Well, I had moved to South Florida. I was working for a company in Hollywood, and I was attending AA at a little clubhouse there off of State Road 84. And that's where a lot of my healing and my journey began, was there. So that's how I ended up with a therapist on Harrison Street.
Oh, I've gone there 1,000 times, the 12-step house there at 84. I know you were. So you just happened to be there and meet up the lady. Very good, because Hollywood's a really place dear to my heart, and I'm glad you got on the good road. All the best.
It was very good to me. Thank you.
Thanks, Bobby. Okay, Ekaterina in Canada.
Yes, oh my goodness. The story just gets more interesting. Yeah, you know what? You're very resilient. And, you know, it's almost like you sought out help and you got the help that you needed. And I would say that you're one of the lucky ones, you know, because I think many people, they spiral into addictions and, you know, self-harm. And sometimes they don't find that person to listen to them or to lift them up, or they're not resilient enough to lift themselves up. Like they still have learning to go through and more traumas to kind of deal with and heal. And I'm so glad that, I mean, you just kept at it. You kept at it. And I can imagine how much hard work you had to put in to just get out of that state. But I'm so glad that you are here to tell your story. And it's inspiring for people that are maybe still struggling to get out of those addictions and the heartbreak. So kudos to you. You're very resilient.
Thank you, Katrina.
Thanks,
I'm so glad you're here.
Okay, so you're in Florida. You've told your sponsor. You found a counselor who you trust. Take it away.
Okay, and so my counselor, her name was Margie, and she really was a turning point because, like I said, I did connect with her, and she told me the one thing, you know, like I said, about if I felt suicidal, it was okay to tell her, and she wouldn't have me committed because I just knew if I ever said that, that was what was going to happen. And so I never said anything. But, and of course, we started, I cried a lot, and she started, you know, giving me these assignments to do. And she was pretty hardcore. I will never forget her telling me that if I didn't address my issues, this was after maybe the second or third meeting, that I would end up one of the females on death row because my anger, because of misdirected anger, because I was really angry too. That just terrified me because I thought, oh my God, I don't want to be that person. You know, and how many people were sitting in prisons and on death rows for misdirected anger and just all kinds of things that result in not addressing your issues. And so she started giving me assignments, and one of the first assignments that she gave me I just thought was totally insane. And I just refused to do it. I'd go back to my appointment. She said, did you do it? I'm like, no, I didn't do it. I don't want to do this. I don't see where this is going to benefit me in any manner. And all she had asked me to do was, whenever I was flipping through, okay, here we are being old and showing my age again, flipping through magazines, to just start clipping out phrases and pictures that struck me and to make a collage. Crazy, you know, it's not going to do anything.
Message to our madness.
Right? And so one night, I don't know what had happened. I was just sitting in my little apartment and I said, okay, I'm going to do this. And I got the scissors and I got a bunch of magazines and I sat down and I just started clipping pictures and phrases and I put together this collage. And, when I took it back the next week, I was really proud because the next morning, I had the thing put together in like 2 hours, and it was on a poster board, and I was like, oh my God, don't come near me with the scissors right now, you know? I was on a mission, and when I took it back, it was just so crazy when she pointed out to me how everything in the collage kind of like all fell together. It was truly kind of another eye-opener because I hadn't seen the picture that she saw. And I kept that for a very long time. And I was really pissed off about it, too. And I told him, I said, I'm going to Kinko's, and I'm going to make a copy, and I'm going to mail it to him. And I said, that was something that I really, really, really wanted to do. I always knew where he lived. I know where he lives at now. And I never did that. I never had the courage to do that. I don't know why, but it was just there in the back of my head. And of course, I worked with Margie. She was there we were together for like a year and a half. And then I went in one afternoon and she told me that she was going to be moving to another state, another city. And, we only had like one other visit before she would be gone, and I was devastated because I felt like I'm just making progress, you know, when I was comfortable, and you know, it's hard to get comfortable, and I don't want to start this all over again. And so here we go with another lapse. You know, I saw her in the time. We communicated via snail mail at that time. That was the only means of communication. And of course, she encouraged me to keep going, and here I go back again, and I'm on this little roll of trying to find that right person I would know whenever I walked in. I guess I was very also fortunate where a lot of people don't have some of the resources maybe available to them. I had great insurance at the time. I had, through my employer, I also as a tribally enrolled Native American, you can use resources on any reservation. And I contacted the Seminole Reservation. I understood that they had a mental health department. And that's where I ended up going for the next 8 years with a man. It was very kind, very soft-spoken. And like I said, I was really angry that I had to start all over again. And there were many times when I would just sit in his office and cry. That was all I could do, you know, and he would tell me that it was okay, you know, just to come back. You know, it's okay, come back, you know, and I did that for a period of time, and then we just continuously every week, and then I would get pissed off when I would go for that hour. And I'm like, I'm supposed to open up this can of worms and go back out into the real world and pretend like, you know, everything is okay. How can I do this?
Sure.
And I had gotten my children back, of course, by that time, after a lot of hard work.
Good.
But that was, yeah. And they were in middle school. One was in middle school. One was in high school. And, you know, they knew that I was going away for an hour, you know, during the week, and I would come home and kind of be upset. So I did eventually discuss it with my boys to a certain degree, because I felt like it was only being fair to them, because, again, it had affected every relationship, my relationship with them, everything. And
sure.
I didn't want them to, they needed to know a little bit about what was going on, and they were very supportive. And that was one of the harder things to do, because they had, you know. But so I continued to see Jay, and then of course I go to see him after 8 years. We're making all kinds of progress, and he told me he had gone on a trip to, he had an application, and he met this woman, and they were getting married, and he was moving to New York. And yeah, so there I was again. And after that, you know, I felt like I've not gone back to counseling since then. I made a lot of progress, I feel. There's still not days that it doesn't, you know, pop into my mind. I'm very fortunate that I have lifelong best friends who support me and now know. And a lot of times when the dreams come, that used to really make me angry too, because I was like, I have control of my waking hours to a certain degree, but I don't have control of the nightmares. And so when that happens, right, of course I call them, and we talk, or they come over, and I'm very fortunate to have a very strong support system. Very fortunate in that respect. So, you know, I try to do the best that I can. Recently saw the daughter when my sister passed away this summer. She had Alzheimer's for the last 5 years. And, you know, there was when the daughter was there, of course, some discussion about him coming, and I spoke to another family member, and I was like, if he's going to come, I have to leave. I cannot be here. I cannot see him. And the only contact I did after the age of the internet came about, and social media and social marketing, I don't know why, one morning I got up and decided I was going to look him up, and I did, and I sent a message, and he pretended like he didn't know who I was and blocked me. And I was like, you know exactly who I am.
Right.
You know sure. exactly who I am. So, and I've been involved, of course, with a lot of groups on Facebook. I became active in Maine after I moved back to South Carolina in 2008, whenever I started having a lot of health issues, and had some help, a lot of health issues. Of course, now after reading books, and I know that it's pretty common for survivors and thrivers to have the body pains and different things. And
yeah, absolutely.
You know, so I could totally get that. And so Rain has been very supportive. I volunteered and did a lot of stuff with them when they first started up. So again, I'm old. I'm not as ever active as I used to be. And I have several people that I've met that I still keep in contact with, and a young girl, gosh, I can't even think of where she's from, to Amsterdam. She speaks Dutch, but she's always such an inspiration, because, you know, I'm always trying to help someone in some aspect.
Sure.
And sharing my story can help someone then I beat him just a little bit more, and I beat them just a little bit more. I don't know how to even describe or what the right words would be, that it's just like, I am not going to let him win today. It's right. Somewhat of my mantra. I'm not today. Not today.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that. And I'm gonna stop you right there. Yeah, I absolutely love that. That's so inspiring. And I had a question I wasn't sure about. Your niece, when did they find her?
Well, whenever he met someone that was getting married, and I guess that's when he sent her back. We knew where they were. We just couldn't get the opportunity to get her. But how convenient was that? But that's how that happened. She came back after he became engaged and got married again.
Did you ever ask him if she ask her if she was abused?
No, I'm not. Of course, I saw her recently, and the family just kind of like went their separate ways, and not a lot of contact. And
right.
I've often wondered if Peggy and the older sister Pat knew. And when I started acting out and running away, no one ever asked me or even said anything, or, you know, it was just, I was a bad girl, you know, I was running away and drinking and drugging, and it was all that, you know. And now you kind of know whenever you see those things happening, this is what's really going on in most cases.
Yes.
You know,
and hey, it's just our way of, so many of us have had that label put on, like, you're the problem, but no one ever gets to that root underneath. So that makes a lot of sense. We're going to go right to the panel, so let's go to my co-host, Joe in Oregon.
Hi, Angela. You know, when you said about the collage, that totally brought me back to not wanting to do mine. And but then it's just amazing. Once I got into it, I just found the exact picture and the exact words. And I was wondering if it happened like that for you. It was, or because it sounds like yours merged together very nicely.
It did. It was so, I mean, I didn't even realize that how everything was, I mean, just such as an impact whenever I was putting it all together. Like I said, just the words were just popping out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And in a matter of just, like I said, a couple of hours, the whole thing was completely done. And I put it away and didn't really even look at it anymore until I went back. And then everything was almost like even in a sequence, starting at the top and going all the way around the board. And it was crazy. It was crazy. And I kept it for many years. And then it was like rolled up and in the back of my closet after a while for many years. And I moved. And, of course, it would go with me wherever I went.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a fire in 2000, August of 2000, and lost everything. That was one of the pieces of my that was gone. And I thought maybe at that point it was time to let it go from the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, that's good.
But
yeah.
It was great to see. I didn't know that at the time. Like I said, I was pretty angry about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you for sharing that. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad you did one, too. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Joe. I just wanted to tell you, I give homework assignments to my clients, too, and they don't always do them right away when they're really impactful. So it was delightful to me when you told that story. So, all right, we're going to go to Val in New Jersey.
Yeah, Joe totally stole my question. I think the collage thing sounds fabulous. I would totally do a collage.
But what I was really wondering, I'm just so curious, I don't know, and maybe you don't have to answer this, but I'm just curious as to what things popped out to you that you put on that collage. Like, what were they, angry words, or what were they?
A lot of them were angry words. One of the things, and I didn't even realize this, that I had somehow managed, I guess, that the words were on the same page or in a different part, because it was two different fonts and smaller and larger. And one of the things is, every woman has a story to tell. It's not how she tells it, it's how she lives it. And there was also a picture of I-95 headed south from New Jersey. How that, I mean, it was just like a fluke. How did that get there? You know, and a lot of them were angry words, you know. A lot of them were innocent words at the same time. Little girl lost, you know. So it was just bizarre, the words and things that jump out. And I'm not even appreciating with it as you're doing it. So it was a big turning point.
So did you feel like when you completed it, you were surprised at what came out?
I was shocked, yes.
Yeah.
Very much so.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you.
Okay, Carol.
Yeah, I like the idea of the collage. Since you've gotten on that, we used to do that at places where I worked. But when I had to do my own collage, because I'm a survivor, they weren't, some of them. But anyway, the point is, I couldn't put my collage together because of it was too painful. You know what I'm saying?
I get it.
You know, so whether it was pictures of people, you know, from the past, I mean, photograph pictures, you know, like when we had cameras, those type of pictures. Right. And then words, you know, ugly words, words spoken, situations, whatever. I did mine. I got it all done. And because I was supposed to do that, because my class was supposed to do that, but you know what I did? I went out and I took all of those ugly memories and I burnt it. I burnt it.
Yeah.
I couldn't, the way I looked at it, as I was burning this collage that I'd made, I decided that, you know what? Those people were toxic. They were ugly. They hurt me, and now I'm going to set them free. That's it. Set them free. I don't want them in my life anymore. I don't want them in my thoughts anymore. I don't want them to take up any part of my brain anymore, emotionally or spiritually. That's how I worked with the collage. So the questions that were asked are quite proper, because when you're putting the collage together, it does stir a lot of emotional, you know, feelings within yourself. And so I burnt mine. Okay, I just wanted to make that comment. Thank you.
I'm glad you shared that. And what works for one might not work for the other, but you found a way that worked for you. That's most important.
That's how I did it. Just let it fly into the wind. That's it. Goodbye.
Thanks, Carol. Okay, Darlene in Tennessee.
Hey, I know I couldn't do a collage. It would be too painful. So kudos to you and all that have done it or even attempted to do it.
Well, thank you. I'm sure you'll find the strength to find what works for you, and I'm glad you're here, darling.
Yeah, as long as I'm telling my story and writing my book, that gets me along fine.
Okay, so you're right. That's awesome.
So thank you so much for sharing.
Thanks, Darlene.
Thank you.
Okay, Bobby in Florida.
Yeah, here I am, Angela.
Hi, Bobby.
Angela, you must have wings today, because I am sitting here making a collage. I got my little scissors, and I make it. I start from food products that I buy and use, that I bought, you know, having the house here because we were homebound. So I take the labels for years, and I start cutting the labels up and cutting something that resonates to me that while I'm doing it. I think it over, and I'm just so shocked that you brought that little crafting up while I'm sitting here, you know, listening to you cutting my little scissors. So lots of happy days to you. Happy days.
Thank you, Bobby. Be careful with those scissors.
Thanks, Bobby. I want to say that's going to be a great homework assignment. I'm going to use that. So
it was amazing.
We have about 30 minutes left. Let me know if you want to, if you have more you want to tell now, or if you want to talk to the audience, or if you want me to open the mics and let the panelists ask questions. How would you like to do it?
Well, I think I'm pretty much caught up to where I am, you know, other than I'm really glad that all of you guys were here. Whenever the one lady was talking about surviving and thriving, I totally get that. Some days I survive and some days I thrive, and it's okay. You know, it is okay. And I'm just glad that you guys are all here. I'm glad I made it this far. I never thought it was ever going to happen. And I never thought something as silly as a collage was going to be such a healing process. But I'm glad to know some others of you have found that as a tool that worked as part of your healing process. And I would think, you know, there's not a whole lot more I can say. I'm glad that Bill reached out to me again because he had asked me a few years ago. And I thought about it, and I was just not ready. And this time, I guess, I was like, okay, I can do this. And it was Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and I was like, let's do this. So thank you, guys. Mm-hmm. And we can go any way that you would like to go, Linda. I'm game.
Well, we are so happy that you're here and so happy you shared your story. It's an impactful story, and I know it's going to touch a lot of people. And this is recorded so they can hear it again, and you are part of our family now. I mean, here at NASCA, we love each other, and we are family. We got each other's back, and you're part of that now. So I'm going to open all of the mics, and I'm just going to ask that you state your name and then ask a question or make a comment.
This is Joe. Hi. Angela, I was wondering what your dreams are, or what you have planned, or what you have, you know, what's coming up for you.
Well, as I am approaching my senior years, Joe, I am, of course, enjoying a peaceful life because I, like I said, had some health issues that really changed my whole life. My life was completely 360 financially, and I will never recover. And from that, you know, the financial aspect, but that's okay. And my dreams are just to be peaceful and enjoy. I garden a lot. I have a deaf dog. I rescued a couple of dogs, and I've always had a dog. And deaf dogs are my thing. So I'm with my third Deppy, and we keep life very simple, and that's what works for me. So,
sounds
and to help always help someone else who reaches out.
Sounds wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks, Gail. Anyone else have a question?
I have a question, Linda. This is Carol. I'm having a little problem with my phone as usual. I'm way up high on a mountain, and my reception isn't always very good. But I know you got to see your sons. They were living with you. How is your relationship with them today? Do you see them?
I do. My youngest son moved back. Of course, my boys, we lived in South Florida, like I said, during their middle school and high school years. Everyone thought it was a bad idea. It ended up being the best thing that ever happened. They both graduated from high school at South Broward High School and are very productive. Never been in trouble, knock on wood. I don't know how I got so fortunate. You know, I really, really did. And I was, one of my best friends tells me that my boys knew that I'd already been through enough. That's why they were so good. They didn't want to do anything else.
You know, when we have such a good relationship with our children, I also have a good relationship. I went through some stuff they did. It's amazing, and it really does help fill your heart with joy and also, too, with peace, you know, because so many people have gone through the lives that we've gone through. Their children are affected by it so badly that they, too, it's like never breaking the cycle. You know what I'm saying? Never breaking the cycle. And it sounds like in your life, you're at the point in your life now, okay, you have some physical problems. We all do. This is true. This happens to those of us who've been abused. I have them also. But and some of us go out and we just, you know, do all kinds of things, and others sit back and relax and just say, oh, thank God. You know, you know, there is that, you know, because you've gone through so much. And so I just want to thank you, and I'm very happy for you. Are you still going for counseling now? Do you have to, or do you feel like you need to, or are you good where you're at?
There are times when I feel like I could use some more counseling, of course. I think that will probably be something that will always be in the back of my mind as long as I'm breathing. You know, because there are still as much counseling and therapy as I did, there's still parts that were never discussed and probably can never be discussed, especially when the nightmares come back. It really disturbs me when that happens. You know, but I have no control over that, and it's not real. But it still upsets me that I don't have the ability to control that. The controlling part of me wants to just make that not happen, of course. And you know, with the family, other than, you know, my children, our relationship is good. It's not as good as I would like it to be, but they're adult men, you know, and it's different with boys than it is with girls. And, but life is good, and I am very blessed to have had a lot of people put in my path to guide me in that way. But, yes, okay, I do feel like I need more therapy. I do. There are a lot of times when I think, oh, my God, this is not over. You know, it'll never be over. It'll be over when I'm, I guess, I'm 6 feet under or whatever, you know.
Well, hopefully it won't be that long. You know, maybe once in a while it's good to go for, you know, to talk to someone. If you can find a really good counselor, you know, somebody you feel, you know, okay with. It's not always comfortable, no. But sometimes it's good to face your demons and get over them, you know, in the sense that you use the word control, you use the word accept, you know what I'm saying? But you're doing fine, and I'm so happy you came on the show tonight, so thank you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, and I'm glad you're here, too.
Oh, yeah. No problem.
I want to say, Angela, you know, I have clients that I've seen for, not seen on a regular basis, but clients from 20 years ago will call me up from time to time and say, hey, I'm going through something right now. I need to talk it out. And that's true for all of us in life. Like, we're never done healing, and we're always on that journey.
Yeah.
Does anyone else have a question? Just say your name, first name, and go ahead.
Darlene. I just think it's interesting how we can go like and deal with it the best we can, and like you said, it's always going to be there somewhat. But I don't know a person on this earth who hasn't been abused that still don't live life and is not affected by some things and react a certain way as well. So, you know, this is not all that bad. It just shows that you're human.
I have to remind myself of that sometimes with my humanness.
Right.
Thank you, darling.
You're welcome.
Yeah, those night terrors can really be a problem for a lot of us here at NASCA. I've had them since I was a little girl, and every once in a while they will still come back, but there's little tricks and things you can do to help that. But they,
yeah,
it is bothersome.
Important.
What's
yes.
that? I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt or talk over you. They're few and far between. But they can be so intense, and when they're few and far between, and then they just pop up out of nowhere when everything seems to be going good, that's when it's like, okay, where did that come from? Why now? You know? Right.
And anyone else have a question? Okay.
I was just going to also say that I probably should have mentioned during part of the story, of my story, after my health issues and back in South Carolina, I never remarried again. Of course, I was in a long-term relationship, but I did meet someone here in South Carolina, and it was a very abusive relationship, and I thought I was way much more well than that. So that was a, you know, another kind of classic thing that I've read about that we do, but I didn't think it would happen to me. But it did.
How did you get out of that relationship?
My best friend basically told me that she would help me. And I even went to New Jersey with this person. New Jersey is a big part of my story somehow. I don't know what it is about you guys. New Jersey, you guys are awesome. But I went to New Jersey, and she ended up flying to New Jersey and moving my things back with me. And it was, he went to jail for 90 days. And I had never really known how the legal system worked because as my perpetrator was a police officer, needless to say, it almost is like anxiety to think I have to be involved in anything that involves the police. So, but I've been out of that and away from that for 10 years. It was strictly no contact. But that was, I did forget that part of how that did happen, but it happened much later in life. You know, the things that you
right.
think, I kind of did everything backwards, I guess, to a certain degree. Everything was pretty good up until about 50, and then it kind of went backwards for a little bit. But after that, I've been the last 2 years. So that's good.
Yeah, that's a good best friend, too. It's a very good best friend.
Mm-hmm. And I'm very fortunate to have a very strong, supportive, 3 friends that know me and have known me almost my whole life. So not many people can do that and say that.
And you got a family here now. Anyone else want to comment on that last part or ask a question?
I do.
Yeah, here's Bob.
It's Val. Val in New Jersey.
Oh, Val.
Go ahead, Val.
I was wondering how much time in between when you first found that help till the time you were able to tell your best friends what happened to you?
Oh, my. That's a good question. Because I was in South Florida and not here in South Carolina, we didn't see each other as often. So it was probably a few years before she knew, before I was able to tell her. Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Because there wasn't
any, I bet
you know,
did you feel relieved then? I'm sure you felt relieved when she could share that burden with you.
I did feel some relief, but also probably at that time I felt a lot of shame and I felt a lot of regret and a lot of sadness that I didn't feel like I could trust her to tell my secret to at that time. But she would have told. I was just terrified that someone would tell. And the first therapist told me that I hadn't told because I was protecting my grandparents. And I was.
Right. Yeah.
You know, kind of a huge weight for a child to carry, thinking that, you know, I was protecting them and that's what I was doing, but not taking care of myself in the right way either. Kind of very confusing,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Val.
Thank you for sharing.
Okay, Bobby. Oh, okay, Val, you got more? I'm sorry.
Mm-mm. All done.
Okay, thanks, Val. Okay, Bobby, go ahead. You're next.
Yeah, here I am. Hello, Angela.
Hi, Bobby.
I'm just going to talk over you. I'm talking about New Jersey. It seems to be one of the states. Seems to be a state of mind. It's a New Jersey state of mind, which really doesn't exist anywhere in the 13 original colonies. It surely doesn't exist like the 52 states. So it's your own aura that's sort of picks up the energy from New Jersey. And I quite understand. I see. I can't even put it in real terms what it is about New Jersey. So thanks for your calm story I listened tonight, and thank you for your wisdom and your I could feel a thankfulness in you tonight, which gave me a good feeling too. Thank you.
Thank you, Bobby.
Thanks, Bobby. Anyone else? We have about 10 minutes left.
Oh, this is Joe. Have one thing. Hello? Hello? This is Joe.
Okay.
I just have one thing about nightmares. Now, it's just something that I've come up with, which may or may not totally relate or resonate with you at all, but I've found that when I get nightmares, it's my sort of spike. My body's telling me something. It's saying, "Here, I've been hanging on to this. Do you want this? Do you want to see this anymore? Do you want me to continue to hang on to it, or do you want to release it?" And so what I try to do is just say, "Thank you for showing it to me, and I'm ready to release it." It helps some people. It doesn't help others. But I just wanted to mention that it was something that was helpful for me especially the same nightmares over again.
I need to remember that. Thank you for sharing that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I love that. I love that philosophy. That is a wonderful way to work it out. I usually tell people write it down and then discuss it, but that's a really neat way. Thanks for sharing that, Joe.
Oh, thank you.
You know, I want to say something about that. Joe, you just said something. You said, especially when it's the same nightmare over and over and over again. I think that is the mind's way of showing you that this is an incident or a situation that was never resolved. And I think that's really good. You know, then you have the choice to either, you know, tell it where to go, which is what I usually do, you know, or talk to somebody about it who would maybe give me some insight as to why I was having that type of dream or nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with me, with the nightmares, since that was brought up, yes, I used to have terrible nightmares. There was always people chasing me through the woods, and I was about ready to fall off a cliff. You fall off a cliff, that's it's showing. That means it's a terrible insecurity. And I had terrible insecurity all of my life. And so finally one time I just got so sick and tired of that damn nightmare, I told it to go, you know what, itself, and you know what? I never had it again.
I'm going to try that next time too.
That worked for me. I just thought I'd share that.
Well, thank you. I love it.
Oh, it worked.
Hello, this is Darlene.
Go ahead, Darlene.
Sure. Whenever I have the nightmares, and if I have trouble sleeping, or if I know I'm going to go back to sleep and continue the nightmares, I'll get up and watch something on TV that's funny. And so I'm not watching TV in my bedroom. I'm actually making a move to the living room where I watch TV and, you know, get my mindset. My surroundings are in a different location, you know. I start looking at humorous things and get my mind on something else. And then, so when I go back to bed, I usually don't go back to that nightmare.
That's good,
good
too.
Yeah,
that's
it is
too.
Good. That's a good idea. Thank you, Darlene. I'll
excellent.
Have to remember that when that happens again.
Thank you. I have to remember and do it still to this day. So,
yeah.
It helps a lot.
Anyone else?
Well, Darlene, you know what? I'm sitting here thinking about that. My way of doing it works for me, and your way of doing it works for you. And what you're doing is you're removing yourself from where you had your nightmare, and that's
uh-huh.
taking you away, you know, psychologically into a different area. And then if you turn on cartoons or something, I don't know what you said you were turning on, but, you
yep.
know, something to make... Yeah, something to make you laugh, or some sort of comedy or something. Yeah, I could see that would definitely
uh-huh.
work too. I like that.
You see the funny babies, or you see some funny videos, and you know Darcy
mm-hmm.
Lynn. You know, that's a
yeah,
or,
it really helps. Yeah, mm-hmm.
that, it does.
Yeah,
it gets your mind.
I can see that working. Mm-hmm.
It works great.
Very good. Anyone else? You have about 6 minutes left. Angela, is there anything you want to tell the listeners? Is there any advice or wisdom that you've learned that you want to pass on to anyone who might be listening and didn't find their voice yet?
Don't stop. Don't stop. Don't give up. Continue the fight. Things are a lot different now. I think the world is, you know, it's still such a taboo subject, even with the Me Too movement. I do try to be active in that aspect, and I've done a lot of marches in the Me Too campaign, and, you know, just don't stop until you find that person, because there is that person. I don't know, you know, if you might be a person who feels like you don't have resources available to you. I know that there are a lot of places who work on sliding scales fees. And if you're desperate for change, it can change, and it will change. It doesn't ever go away, but it changes, and it can be different, and you can find that peace of mind. And even now, as I struggle a lot of times, I mean, I'm constantly working on me. I'm doing a course online now that's offered free through Yale. On finding happiness and how to be happy. Because I want to be there. I want to be happy. And there were times when I didn't think that was possible. And then when I would find, you know, maybe I had gone a day and I might have had 5 minutes where I was happy. And those 5 minutes, you know, sometimes would turn into 10 minutes and then into hours.
Mm.
And just trying to make them all good days. And I hope that you can, if you haven't found your voice and you haven't found a way out, that you don't stop your search. Because, you know, my biggest thing is I do, by telling my story, I hope it maybe helps someone to find their voice, helps someone to not give up, because don't ever give up. I'm not going to, my thing was I'm not going to let him win, no matter what.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
He won so much before, you know, and I can't anymore. There's nothing left. You know, I'm going to be happy and I'm going to be good and I'm going to be productive and hopefully help someone else. Mm. And thank you guys for having me.
Absolutely. And you're doing it already. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Does anyone on the panel have any last words for listeners?
This is Joe. I just want to say don't give up, like she says, and don't. There's always hope. Don't give up hope. There's always hope.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I always say there's life after abuse, because there is. If you guys go out and find the help that, you know, absolutely. If you do that, you know, if you find the help you need and so forth, there is life after abuse and you can be happy and we deserve to be happy. And it was never, ever, ever, ever our fault. A CPS worker told me that many years ago, and that got me through my childhood with at least the thoughts of myself. I didn't suffer from shame because she told me that. It was never, ever, ever my fault. It's never our fault.
Exactly.
Remember that. Yeah.
We're taking too long.
Mm-hmm.
This is Darlene. I got something else to say. I want to remind people about that support group tomorrow also.
Yes.
At 2, what is that called, Pacific? Eastern?
Eastern Standard Time. Thank
okay.
you, Darlene. And
if
anyone
click on that link?
I can't hear her now, damn it.
Yes, that's
on. Explain it.
The
Give us
support
a
we have a I'm sorry.
We have a support group Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday at 2:00 Eastern Standard Time. And we invite anyone to come. There is a on our website and on our Facebook page, NASCA, NASCA.org, and NASCA on Facebook, we have a, you can click the post for the meeting, and that will take you to a form that you put your name and email address in, and then we will send you the link to join the Zoom meeting. The meetings are closed, and they're not recorded. So it's private, it's safe, it's secure, and we invite anyone who's home and needs that support, needs that fellowship to join us. Again, the website is NASCA.org, and we do accept donations. We are a nonprofit, and all the workers here are volunteers. We all try to pitch in wherever we can to keep this going and to keep this helping survivors. So we ask for tax deductions. And, Angela, I just want to thank you so much. You did an excellent job. Your story is so impactful, and I'm sure people are going to be listening to it, you know, in weeks and months ahead because it's recorded on the NASCA website. And do you have any final words for anyone?
I think we've covered it. You guys are awesome. I'm so glad you were all here. I'm so glad you are all still here. And thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. Again, Linda Vitti from New Jersey. And God bless you all. Thank you for being here.
Another tomorrow. That dawn was you are forgotten after all that you've done.
Blog Talk Radio.